Stop 4. Professor Caroline Bout on the Esquiline Venus and the Sleeping Hermaphroditus.
I'm Carrie Vout, and I teach classics and history of art at the University of Cambridge. As you approach the large round plinth in this section, you're greeted by two classical statues, both a bit smaller than the average person. The one on the right, a male figure painted to resemble bronze, is the Idolino, which will not be described in this track. To his left is a female figure, nude except for sandals. It's a plaster cast of a marble statue known as the Esquiline Venus that was made in Rome probably in the 1st century AD. She faces us, standing on a low plinth. She's about 1.5 meters tall and shares that plinth with a vase on a smaller cube-shaped plinth of its own. The vase is narrow, about 50 centimetres tall, and decorated with an Egyptian lotus leaf pattern and a coiling snake that have led some to see her as Cleopatra in the guise of Aphrodite, Venus. The vase is draped with plaster fabric. The implication is that it's a towel and the vase a vessel for water, as if she's bathing. Her hair is wrapped in a strip of cloth knotted over a bun at the back of her head. A fringe of hair frames her forehead, the hair teased into tightly packed curls like snails. She has symmetrical features, almond-shaped eyes, a straight, narrow nose and delicate lips. She stands with her weight on her straight right leg, her left leg bent, tipping her pelvis slightly to one side. Her arms are broken off, though the raised left shoulder and remnants of a hand on her hair show that both arms were originally lifted as she tied her headdress. She casts a thoughtful gaze down towards the floor. Something about her expression draws you in. Her breasts are small and high, the plaster blown around her left nipple. A groove runs from just below the centre of her breasts down towards her belly button, which is deeply indented, her belly swelling gently over her pubic area. She's completely free of body hair. Viewed from the rear, an indentation marking her spine runs from the nape of her neck to her buttocks that are full and fleshy. Her shoulder blades appear to press just a little through the sculpture's surface. The surface of the marble statue that she copies would have originally been delicately painted. In the ancient world, statues like this shocked and seduced, and not only because statues of living women were normally heavily draped, but because as the goddess of love, beauty, and sex, Venus failed in her mission if her statues didn't make their viewers feel something. One author, writing in Greek under the Roman Empire, imagines two men paying homage to such a statue. One of them so impressed by the front view that he can't resist running up and kissing it. The other, who prefers boys, is more circumspect. Until, that is, he walks around the statue and sees its bottom, at which point he too is enraptured. But rapture is dangerous. Venus is a goddess, remember, with the power to destroy as well as to captivate. The Esquiline Venus has the additional embarrassment of appearing very young, even by the standards of a world in which it was the norm for women to marry and have children in their teens. Is she girl or goddess? Passive object or active agent? Dare you move around our statue to take in its other side? If you do, a second, smaller sculpture is revealed.
You can pause the guide here while you navigate the space following the tactile line, after which you can resume when you're ready.
This sculpture too is a nude, but this time lying on its stomach. Their name is Hermaphroditus, the stunning two-sex child of Hermes and of Aphrodite. The curves are familiar, derived from the female nudes we've just been talking about. Dozing rather than sleeping, the figures propped up on their left elbow, their face resting on their folded right forearm that's placed on a marble pillow. Towards the base of the skull, their hair's in short ringlets. Their left knee is drawn up such that the calf crosses the shin of the right leg. A sheet is tangled around one elbow and rucked up beneath the body, pooling by their bare feet. The sheet's draped on a buttoned mattress. Nipped and tucked, this mattress is depicted with such realism that it looks as though you could bounce on it. It was added to the large-scale sculpture, which our version reproduces and reduces, in the 17th century. The mattress domesticates the figure, which would have originally been positioned in a rocky terrain. If we take the figure's writhing seriously, and with it the invitation of the elevated elbow and raised left knee to navigate the statue and admire its nudity from the front, then we're met with more than we might have bargained for. Not only smooth skin and a pert breast, but the remains of a penis. In our version of the sculpture, the penis has been damaged, probably deliberately. At about the same time as it was made, English antiquities collector Henry Blundell had his ancient Hermaphroditus chiselled into a sleeping Venus. The sculpture's weaker as a result of its surgery. Everything about it was originally designed for the big reveal, when what the viewer thought was an off-duty sex goddess or a vulnerable maiden is realised as Hermaphroditus, god of male and female sex. Already in the 17th and 18th centuries, the sculpture was thought beautiful. Lady Townsend called a bronze copy of it the only happy couple she ever saw. But its beauty can be a source of fear as well as of pleasure. Hermaphroditus challenges binary gender norms and the cultural expectations of active male, passive female that come with them.
End of stop 4. The next track is stop 5. Writer Emma Dabbery discusses the game of goose. Just follow the tactile floor line to the next grey square.